We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Hey, we're back. Hour number two. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We're here from 8 to 10 every Sunday morning. And I tell you what, I hope we're not on when the Saints play at 12 o'clock. Because if we're on and the Saints were scheduled for 12 o'clock, it means there's no football. And we can't have that under any circumstance. We're going to have football.
I agree.
So we got to. What's New Orleans? What's New Orleans? What's the Southern United States without football? I mean, you know, they already closed down our one religion where we couldn't go to church for a month. They can't close down our other religion. There's just no way.
So, exactly.
So I don't know. Exactly. So like we said before, if you want to commit political suicide in South Louisiana, say there's no football. All right, let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Everett. Hey, Everett, you on All Things Legal with Doug Cinceri and Albert Nico. What you got for us, brother?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a situation with a younger brother.
All right.
Who's a long-term crackhead.
All right.
He has one of my younger sisters as a guardian. He gets a check from Social Security every month.
Mm-hmm.
He has been diagnosed with hepatitis C. He refuses to stop doing drugs, so they cancel that treatment.
Okay.
My problem with it is that my sister is ill, and she needs a break. What I'm trying to find out from you guys is it possible to file an injunction in court and have a judge demand that he go to rehab? From my understanding, in the state of Louisiana, it has to be voluntary. And he will not volunteer to go to rehab. That's it.
Well, in under certain circumstances, the coroner could PEC him and have him declared as for a very short time for 72 hours hold him if he's a danger to himself or a danger to others. That's sometimes short term, but that's not a long term solution. Can you file an injunction? It depends. If he's got a permanent inability to understand the consequences of his actions, he could possibly be interdicted, but this doesn't seem like a situation that he could.
Well, he said that the sister is a guardian right now. Does she have a legal guardianship?
Or she just collects his check?
She collects his check. I'm not
with Social Security.
That's a legal guardianship, isn't it?
Well, he gets Social Security. Is that what he gets? Social Security disability or something, or Social Security SSI?
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah.
Okay. So what Social Security said is, she was put on to manage his check because he's unable to manage it from SSDI or SSI. So I think that determination is not a legal adjudication, but under certain circumstances, you could go to the coroner's office. If he's in an acute situation where he threatens to harm himself or harm others due to a mental or cognitive impairment induced by drugs or otherwise, to temporarily have him held for 72 hours. Now, after that point, the coroner will make a decision whether you hold them longer or they have to release them. That's a temporary situation. You're in a very tough situation in that circumstance, because you can't. It's hard to be preemptive. If you know someone's going to hurt themselves, but you can't have, no definitive proof as to when and where, it's hard to go ahead and do something preemptively from a legal perspective. Sometimes you have to wait till it happens, and then you take action. But as far as getting an injunction to get help, no. I don't think you can do that. And this is not legal advice, but someone who has a drug problem, if they do not come to the realization they need help, there's very little that you can do except protect yourself and protect your family members, because you cannot compel someone who does not want help to get help if they don't want to get help. And it hadn't crossed the line of violating the law or crossed the line of, being an imminent harm to someone else or being an imminent harm to themselves. So you're in a tough situation there. Often somebody has to be staring down at a cold jail cell before they realize they have a problem and want to get help. Now, if he does, while he's high, threatens to have bodily harm to someone else or to himself, then you can call the police and have them intervene. If he's just acting badly due to the drugs but not violating the law, that's a little tougher to work with, especially if he doesn't want help. Now, from your perspective, sometimes it's good for someone who's a family member to get information from an expert on how to deal with these situations, because sometimes you have to implement tough love and give that person a choice to say, hey, either you're going to clean up or you're going to have to live with the consequences of your action. And if you don't want to get help, if you want help, I'll help you. I'll do whatever I can. I'll get people, get professionals in there to try to help you deal with your problem. But if you don't want help, and they're not violating the law, that's a very difficult situation.
Well, there are extenuating circumstances. And in reference to what you just said about jail, he has a file that's probably 12 inches thick over 30 years. He's gone to mental health clinic.
Yeah.
He's been jailed. He just got out of jail here for 6 months. They busted him on Highway LA-1, riding up and down the highway with a bunch of crack in his pocket.
Well,
he just got out. He's as crazy as a road lizard.
Well, in that situation, you have to wait till he violates the law before you can get an intervention from law enforcement. You have to wait till he becomes an imminent danger to a third party before you have a court involved. Now, like, for example, if while he's high on crack made threats against you, you could get a protective order saying he's got to stay away from you. There's options like that. But as far as compelling him to get treatment, he probably has to be in the context of being arrested, charged, or in some type of situation where he's threatened to harm himself or harm a third party before they would have any intervention. But it sounds like, based on where he is, that's imminent. So I would say, when he does cross the line, you be ready to implement what you need to implement, be it, APEC from a coroner or a, police. You just have to be ready, because it sounds like he's going to go in that direction. But preemptively, to have him do that, it'll be difficult.
Got to wait till he kills somebody.
Well,
in short.
I mean, that he threatens to harm himself or a third party, at that point, that's the most opportunistic time to get him help from a law enforcement or intervention perspective. You know, you may want to contact a substance abuse counselor or someone to give you wise advice on how to deal with it in the interim, because it's a very, very complicated problem with a lot of dimensions, and it's difficult. It's one of the most difficult things you'll ever deal with in life for a family member. And just God bless you, and I wish you a lot of wisdom in dealing with it. We got to go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your Weekend Lawyers. We'll be right back after this brief time out. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your Weekend Lawyers, all things legal. I wanted to follow up with Everett. He called. He said he had he's off the line, but he said he had a brother who's a crackhead or struggling with crack, and he's just been let out of jail. And, you know, if you're in a situation where you have a family member who is on a drug like crack, and he's on it and he's out and you know where he is, call the police and let them deal with it. Because he's going to hurt himself, he's going to hurt someone else. And, you know, our police are great. They're good. And there's so many situations that the public doesn't know about, that police are called in difficult situations. They never make an arrest. They just sort of work the situation out in a way that is very thoughtful and diffuses a lot of situations. So call the police and tell them, look, I have a brother. He's, you know, out of jail. He's high on crack. He's out right now. This is where he is. Please try to handle it. And, they do good with that, and to protect himself and also protect others. And I just want to give out a shout out to the police. They do a great job, and they're getting a bum rap right now because there are so many things that they do that the public doesn't have any idea as to what they do and how many situations they diffuse and how many situations they take care of without any acclaim, without any credit, without any pats on the back. And they do a fantastic job. But that situation, yeah, Albert.
I'll say I agree. You know, it's a thankless job, and the thought of disbanding the police or defunding it or whatever they want to do is just silly. And it's happening. Let's see the fallout from it. I'm glad it's not happening here.
Well, you know, Newell, I'm sure Newell's probably the most, Newell Norman's probably the most qualified to deal with that. But, you know, as lawyers, we see a lot of things, especially, you know, I do family law with my wife, Michelle. There's a lot of situations where you might have a situation where between family members, you might, you know, where police are called and there's, you know, it was a conflict, there's dispute, and the heat's up. And it is amazing to watch these policemen come into a situation, because a lot of, you know, a lot of violence occurs between, you know, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, murders and that sort of thing. So anytime they walk into a situation, they don't know whether that's the last time they walk into a situation and live to tell about it, number one. Number two, when there is a situation where you might have boyfriend and girlfriend and it's getting heated, it is amazing to watch them, how they diffuse the situation, how professional they are, how they get in there and deal with the parties and take a situation that is very, very, has the potential to be highly volatile at their own personal risk, that, and the way they wisely, a lot of times, unwind the situation and diffuse it. And there's no reports that are written. There's no, you know, there's no, they get no commendations for that. You know, they don't get any awards for that. They just do that every day. And for every arrest and that sort of thing, there's a lot of situations that could turn out really bad that they come in, intervene, work with the parties, talk it out, stabilize the situation, and sort of, you know, dodge a situation that could have really been worse. And those are the situations that they aren't publicized. They aren't the things that it's just what people take for granted. And so, you know, I think, in fact, during the news break, when they had the walk where we walk with the police march, that's very constructive, and I was you know, just very glad to see something where, you know, they're working together instead of working against each other. So but anyway, so that was for Everett. You know, just call the police if you know your brother's high and he won't get help, and you know he's out running the streets, and if you know where he's running the streets, call the police and let them, they'll deal with it. Very, you know, they'll deal with it.
You know, because if he's in jail long enough, he might, you know, might dry out. You know, you never know.
So. Well, you got to protect, because also too, you're protecting innocent people who are going to be collateral damage due to that particular habit.
Right, and you're protecting him. I mean, being arrested is actually protecting him. Yeah, it's a tough situation. I wish you good luck.
Yeah. Albert, I have a question, COVID-19 question.
Mm-hmm.
You have a daughter who's probably of age to get married, even though she's not right now. There's not even any potential suitors right now, huh? She's just in school. But she's at that age. If your daughter was getting married, which she's not, I'm just using an example. And you were doing a wedding contract and you wanted to protect the uncertainties of COVID, what would you put in the contract to protect yourself?
As the father of the bride,
who doesn't want to blow any money that they don't have to, or doesn't want to lose any money because of a darn virus, what would you do to make sure to protect yourself in dealing with the, you know, the banquet where you're going to have the wedding so you get your money back?
Well, I mean, obviously in the short term, you want to read the contract and make sure the deposit issue is negotiable. And there are some provisions in the event of this COVID-19 pandemic or any other type of pandemic or, you know, impossibility or unforeseen event, not just at an act of God, which, you know, we think of in terms of a storm or something like that. I would make sure that the deposit is refundable. And I know we talked about this a few weeks ago from the caterer's perspective or from the venue's perspective. And I think it would be fair as a dad, but, you know, when they set it and they book it, they sat down with the bride and the bride's mom and dad or whomever and went over the menu and went over the number of people and the design and the setup of the venue and whether there's a band and all of these things. And so that costs money. You know, the venue's got to pay somebody to do that. So there should be an amount that's non-refundable that, look, this is what it costs us just to get here. We're not talking about buying food and drink and employees to manage the function. We're just talking about somebody that sat down, the salesperson that went over everything with you and got your menu correct and everything like that. So there's going to be a value to that, and it's going to be a small amount, whatever that is in comparison to the entire event. But I think you should lose that amount wherever regardless. And that needs to be a fair number that I think the venue can articulate if they ever have to go to court over it.
All right, we're going to we got to go to a CBS. Hey, we're back. Dirks and Terry, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. Before the break, Albert was just giving advice to fathers of the bride on, you know, let's say your daughter's getting married, you know, a little legal issue with COVID-19, how to protect yourself with if you're doing a contract with a reception hall to host a wedding. And Albert was saying, well, you know, if you have the deposit, you know, that secures the date. But there's other provisions you could put in there that protects in case the wedding would have to be canceled, postponed.
Well, and again, there's a difference between a deposit and, you know, what we call as lawyers quantum merit, right? So, you know, a lot of these places, they require maybe a 50% deposit. You know, how many people, okay, I need this deposit, that'll hold the date, or maybe a 25% deposit. It all varies from contract to contract. But the fact is, then you're going to get closer to the event, but, you know, when you're 90 days out, you've got to pay this. You're 30 days out, you got to pay it in full, that sort of thing. And what you want is an out clause in the event that, you know, in that period of time where you paid a substantial portion of your deposit, all of a sudden, you know, there's some order from the mayor's office or the governor's office saying that no, we can't have large events anymore, you know, over 10 people, then you want the opportunity to get your money back. Or, you know, and obviously the first thing would be to reschedule the event, right?
Right.
But if you can't do that, or if that doesn't work, you know, I had a girl call me, actually from out of town. She was from Ohio, and she said, you know, they offered to reschedule it, but they offered it in January. Of course, it was a hotel, so we had hotel rooms associated with it, everything else. But, well, the problem was they wanted their January rates. And so instead of this summer event where the hotel rooms were cheaper and the venue was cheaper, they said, oh, yeah, we'll move you to January, but we got to charge you our January prices, which I thought was kind of, you know, not a good thing. But she said, you know, a lot of the people that were coming to this destination wedding aren't coming, so we've lowered the number of people, and now they want to charge us this higher amount because it's in January as opposed to in July or August, whatever it was. And she also said, you know, it's they want to charge me the January rate for the event, and it's costing me twice as much money. So it really, you know, they're saying, oh, we tried to reschedule it. Well, you really didn't, because you just, you know, if you can guarantee the rate. So if you're the dad, you know, say, look, if it has to be moved, we're going to guarantee this rate. And that's, you know, just something else to try to have put in your contract to protect you.
Now, if you're in South Louisiana, you have to put something in your contract for a wedding. Is if they move you on the night of an LSU football game, you have the rates adjusted accordingly. Because, as we know, in South Louisiana, most Saturday nights that they have LSU football, the wedding halls are empty because nobody wants to schedule their wedding during an LSU football game. So keep that in mind also. You know, we used to do that at LSU when all our friends were getting married. The first thing we did was find out when was an LSU football game, put an X on that Saturday, and they had planned weddings around that. So in South Louisiana.
Yeah,
so,
you know, back when you and I got married, people had little transistor radios with the earphone in the ear coming up through the suit during the mass.
During the mass. And the priest would have to say, please, who's winning, and turn it down. That's the two things they would say. Let me ask you another thing on COVID-19. Albert, a lot of people call wanting to know business interruption. I have insurance for business interruption. Should I get it because of COVID shut me down?
You know, there are a lot of lawyers that think otherwise. You know, a lot of defense lawyers think no. A lot of plaintiff's lawyers think yes, that you can collect it. I do both, right? I do personal injury work. I do plaintiff's work representing people that file suit against insurance company. I represent insurance companies. So I'm of the opinion that there is no coverage under the policies. You know, granted, I've not read every policy, but for the vast majority, there is no coverage for that. And the reason is because it is a property damage policy, right? When you have a policy, it's not a liability policy. That's part of it. But the other part is the property coverage. And part of the property coverage is there has to be an occurrence. There has to be an event that triggers coverage. And the event would be damage to your property or damage to property within the vicinity of your structure. So, to come along and say, oh, there was COVID in the building, or there was, you know, and this, and again, a lot of these policies they deny coverage for
microorganisms,
viruses, and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So, you know, there's exclusions for all of that. I mean, I think a lot of people are wasting their time and getting their hopes up, even with the civil authority. Even with civil authority, there's got to be an event that triggers coverage that caused damage to your property or to the property surrounding your, and it's just, I don't think it's going to happen. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah,
especially if it goes to federal court. The makeup of the Fifth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, I think would shut that down quickly.
Quickly, yes. So, and yeah, most of the policies, a lot of policies have microorganism exclusions and virus exclusions, and what I would say if you're a business and you filed a business interruption claim, don't budget that into your budget. Just
right. Right. Just hey, look, if you got some lawyer out there that wants to roll the dice for you on contingency and get a percentage of it, great. You know, we can't hurt to throw your name in the hat, but you never know. I mean, they may convince some judges, especially at the lower court level, or it might be the kind of thing where the insurance company doesn't want to spend the money to defend it, and so you might get a few dollars for cost of defense. But I wouldn't, yeah, like you said, Doug, I wouldn't budget it for 2021's income.
So that's
We were talking about a lot of things too with the whole COVID and the I hate to say it, all these little terms, the new normal, right? But you know, people that own buildings and companies that own, you know, office buildings, I got to think that the market and the dollar per square foot for that kind of space is gonna go down.
Yeah.
You know,
because bricks and mortar,
people are working from home, they realize they can.
Bricks and mortar are on a little bit on the way out. Let's go to a break. Doug Cintieri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Cintieri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. You can also call us at a law firm if you have any questions off air at 504-837-1304. 504-837-1304. I was going to ask Albert another COVID legal question, but I wanted to give this from an anecdotal perspective. As far as we, you know, during the news, you heard the death toll, 125,000 people had died from COVID. But I also want to let, you know, just for perspective, that we've had several successions come in since COVID started. And, you know, we a lot of the people who we had, one had end-stage cancer, end-stage congestive heart failure, end-stage dementia, all in hospice, who did contract COVID at some part, but in their death certificate, they were listed as COVID. So just to give anecdotal perspective, that's when you hear the death toll, because you know, that includes that. And it's just good to, you know, make people aware that that's, you know, when they give you a number and they don't explain how to get to that number, I think it's good to know that a lot of the classification of COVID death toll have been people who are in a last illness in a hospice situation, you know, what percentage.
Many of them, you know, some die of heart attacks. But you know, you might die with COVID, but not from COVID.
Right.
But they're going to list it as a COVID death because if the hospital treats you, they get money for it.
They got to make up
the losses they've had for not being able to treat, you know, elective surgeries and that sort of thing. So
yeah. So, and you know, it's an interesting thing. Sometimes when we have interdictions, when we get the medical records, the medical codes for the diagnosis are different than their diagnosis, because you have to have maybe different codes to get certain type of payments. And even though, you know, you might have dementia, but it might be classified as a psychological illness. And that's sometimes done just to deal with the Medicaid regulations and get payments. But just wanted to give you anecdotal perspective. Okay, Albert, I got another one for you. If you're building a house and you have you're a contractor, or you have some type of service that's being provided and it's supposed to be done within a time period, and the servicer, maybe let's say a house contractor, says, I wasn't able to complete the house within 6 months as contracted because of COVID, and using that as a basis of not performing, is that a good defense?
Well, yes and no. So it depends on what your contract says, obviously, but if it doesn't say anything, Louisiana is a little bit different. You know, they talk about, so if your contract doesn't control, you have to look at the law. Now, there's a civil code article dealing specifically with acts of God. It's force majeure. And basically what it says is that it has to be impossible. It makes the performance impossible. Okay, so in that case, the case law that has kind of followed that has said, look, if you can reschedule something, you got to make arrangements. The parties have to really negotiate in good faith to try to perform from both sides, whether it's the payment side or the performance or the services side. And they really have to try in good faith to come up with an amicable relationship, which, of course, it will be up to a court one day if it ever goes to litigation as to how hard one party or the other decided to negotiate in good faith. But if not, all of the cases say that if the performance is more difficult, the performance is going to cost you more money, the performance of the obligation, I mean, in terms of the contractor. For instance, you know, we had a lot of this in Katrina, and a lot of cases came from Katrina as a result of this. The contractor said, okay, I'm going to build it, labor, materials, everything for, you know, $100,000. Well, all of a sudden after Katrina, the materials went up, you know, 50, some of them 100% and doubled in price. And so the court said, you know, you didn't make arrangements for that in your contract. Therefore, even though your performance is more burdensome, you still have to perform for the price that you quoted because you didn't give exception to that in your contract. And even though, and it's not an impossibility, right? So you didn't meet that threshold that I can bail out of the contract because performance is impossible. It's just more difficult and it's more expensive, and you're going to have to eat the difference in the cost of the materials. So if you're the contractor, you obviously want to have that in your contract, that if there's some sort of act of God, you know, now pandemic, virus, you know, reason where we can't perform, or if there's an increase in material, a substantial increase in the material costs, then that's going to have to be factored in. So if something causes a spike in material costs, we're going to factor that in. If there's a labor shortage, you know, a lot of times you'll see that in contracts with strikes, labor shortages, that sort of thing, then that's going to be factored in. If, you know, I've got this big electrical job with a major high rise, and all of a sudden the electrical union decides they're going to go on strike. Well, I can't complete that portion of the job, which means I can't complete remaining portions of the job. So therefore I have I'm able to count that as a delay in my completion date.
All right, let's go to a break. And I got one more question for Albert after the break before we knock off at 10 o'clock. So let's go to break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. Sort of giving Albert a quiz on COVID issues, on how to apply the law on this unique situation. I have one last one, Albert. You go to the restaurant and you have a great meal, and you come home a couple of days later, and there's a few people in the restaurant. A couple of days later, you're diagnosed with COVID. Can you sue the restaurant because you contracted COVID?
Well, there is some legislation they're still working on, I think, for restaurants and whatever. To give them immunity from that sort of thing, for just any businesses that comply with the standards that are set in place for the governor and your municipality. So if, you know, you're requiring masks, if you're, you know, requiring social distancing, you have your tables so many feet apart and all that sort of thing, then it provides you immunity from those things. You know, as a plaintiff, I think it's just going to be really hard to establish that you contracted COVID from a particular place. I mean, you know, especially if you've been at all active in the last however many weeks, you know, it's a 2-week incubation period. So you'd have to track a person's activities for the 2 weeks prior to that or, you know, within that window. It's going to be a hard case to prove. But
so there's causation problems on that. So there's
some causation problems for sure. And I think there might even be some problems on the liability side.
Yeah.
You know, especially with the legislation. And I'm not certain if it's been enacted yet. I know they're talking in the second session to try to do it.
All right. So good. All right. Well, you passed. So you passed your COVID question. But good news. Looks like the Pelicans got their schedule at the end of the month for a 7-7 for a 7-game season, which is better than none. And we get those young players playing and getting them in a playoff type atmosphere. So next year they'll be ready. So we didn't talk any sports, man. I'm telling you,
they might be able to get to the next step. You know, they're young. Right. They've hopefully been working out. And It'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, that's it. I think there'll be more variation as upsets since there's less practice, and you know it'll be less predictable. I guess is the best way of putting it. But I'm still having my sports withdrawals.
I don't mind a championship with a little asterisk next to it.
That's right. We'll take it with the asterisk. All right. Well, that's a wrap on all things legal. Albert, thanks. Thanks for being
here.
And see you tomorrow. And we'll be back next week on all things legal, our 4th of July holiday. And we'll see you next week. Be good and be blessed. And see you on 4th of July.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.